Cascade Dramas presents War in Zion. This week's front page drama, War in Zion, is a dramatization of another chapter in dramatic history of the Mormons and the settlement of their promised land, now known as the state of Utah. This colorful and true story, never told before, is now appearing serially in the American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world, which comes to you each week with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. Few Americans realize that while the dark clouds of war were gathering over the East in those hectic days prior to the war between the states, another serious threat of civil war was brewing in the West. This threatened civil war of the West was averted by the smallest margin, by the Council of Cool Heads, just 3 years before the bloody struggle began in 61. The 24th of July, 1857, was a big day in Mormon history. It was the 10th celebration of Anniversary Day, the day when Brigham Young led his pioneer party into the Salt Lake Valley to found their new Zion. More than 2,500 Mormon saints had gathered in the mountains under bowers of pines to celebrate in feasting, dancing, and song. Toward evening, a plume of dust rising along a mountain trail signaled the approach of a horseman. A dusty, begrimed messenger galloped into the scene of the festivities, up to the spot where Brigham Young and his elders were seated. His sudden arrival meant bad news, and a sudden silence enveloped the awestruck assemblage. Breathlessly, the rider blurted out his message.
The army is on the way. They're under the command of Brigadier General Harney and Colonel Albert Sidney Johnson. There are 2,500 men, infantry, cavalry, and artillery with heavy supplies of food and ammunition. They're bringing Alfred Cummings, who is to take your place as governor of this territory, Prophet Young. They've already passed Fort Laramie, and they're coming fast, heading for Fort Bridger. I rode night and day for 500 miles to bring you the word.
Thank you for your faithful service to our people. I had hoped this drastic move might have been averted, but the blow has been struck, and we must not shrink from its force. Rest yourself and partake of a feast while I address the saints of Zion. See how they wait in awe and silence for the news you have brought us.
Will you issue an order to resist, Prophet Young?
Wait, wait, General Wells. You will hear everything as I tell the saints of my decision. Today, my people, we are gathered here to celebrate the 10th anniversary of our entry into the new Zion. I told our enemies if they would leave us alone for 10 years, we would ask no odds or favors. But hostile judges and investigators have given false testimony against us, saying we were in open rebellion against federal authority and that we stand as a lion in the path of other Christian communities of service on the Pacific Coast. As a consequence, our president, Mr. Buchanan, has decided upon a drastic and most unwise move. He has appointed one Alfred Cumming to act as governor in my stead without consulting you, the people of this territory. We're sending an army of 2,500 men, infantry, cavalry, and artillery to invade this territory and by force of arms enforce the will of our enemies upon you, a free people. You will, I know, resent this unwarranted intrusion by force and will never permit your homes and lands to be plundered, our houses burned, and your families butchered as they were in the past. Will you? Then go to your homes at once and prepare to resist the invaders. Every man put his firearms in working order. Let the forges blaze and hammer the scythe and the bayonet. Sharpen every sword. Send the word to those of the faithful beyond our territory to hurry home to the defense of Zion. Hold fast to your faith and ask no quarter.
As the federal troops drew closer to the valley, the Mormons' defense strategy was strengthened, and the Utah militia was mustered, 5,000 strong under General Daniel H. Wells. He issued an order to his commanding officer.
Proceeded once to annoy the troops in every possible way. Use every exertion to stampede their animals and then set fire to the wagon train. Keep them from sleeping at night by surprise raids. Block over the road. Destroy the ford. Watch for possible opportunities to set fire to the grass and the windward, so as to envelop their train. Keep your men concealed as much as possible and guard against surprise. Buck Smith.
Yes, sir, General.
Take 50 foot men and proceed to Simpson's Hollow on Green River. Somewhere in that vicinity, they will camp for the night. There you can win a battle without bloodshed. Wait until midnight when the soldiers will sleep. Have your men make a surprise advance. Seize the stack rifles while the others overpower the guards. Without weapons, they must surrender.
Yes, sir, but what about their supply wagon?
Burn them. I'll take one battalion into Echo Canyon and defend that. Then we can join hands for the capture of Fort Bridger. We must harass and delay their advance until late October, and the snows will fall in the mountains, and winter will prove our most valuable ally.
Early in September, the Utah militia had taken up their position. But before actual fighting began, Captain Dan Billy of the Federal Army was dispatched to Salt Lake City to confer with the Mormon prophet, Brigham Young. Brigham Young received the captain cordially, but was firm in condemning the government's move against the Mormon people.
Maybe not want to fight the United States, but if they drive us to it, we shall do the best we can. And I tell you, as the Lord lives, we shall come out conquerors.
The purpose of sending troops into the state is not to molest the Mormons, Mr. Young, but to see that the new governor, the Honorable Alfred Cumming, is safely installed as the chief executive.
Installed against the will of the people, who have had no choice in the selection of who is the government. Why have I been removed? Why have threats of arrest been made against me? I have broken no law, and under the present state of affairs, I will not suffer myself to be taken by any United States officer to be killed as they killed Joseph Smith.
I do not think it is the intention of the government to arrest him, Mr. Young. The army is coming near to install a new governor.
I believe you are telling the truth, as you see it, Captain. But you do not know the government's intentions as well as I do. My knowledge of the workings of the political mind is based upon previous bitter experience. They're sending the army here simply to hold us until a mob can come and butcher us, as has been done before. But if they dare force the issue, I shall not hold the Indians by the wrists any longer for the Frenchman's assistance. The Indians can go ahead and do as they please, for we have nothing to fear from them. We have treated them honorably, and consequently they are our friends. They will fight on our side if your army enters its valley.
I'm ready to concede, Mr. Young, that your forces might stand back the army now if you're ready. But I warn you that an army of sufficient size to overcome all opposition would surge into your territory next year.
We are aware that that might be the case. But we would start to defend every foot of our soil, and if or when they arrive, they will find you far better. We have 3 years' provisions on hand, that we will stay away and then take to the mountains and fight on with defiance to all the autocratic powers of the government. Before we will again suffer, as we have in times gone by, there shall not be one building, nor one foot of lumber, nor a fence, a tree, a particle of grass, hay or food, nothing that will burn will be left in reach of our enemies. You may report back with this decision to your commanding officer.
Well, we'll see about that. We'll show them how to deal with such a base of fight. We'll go to a bank.
I hope you forgive my apparent insistence, General Banks. But I still think Washington should reconsider the use of federal troops, provoking bloodshed and rebellion and settling the issue. After all, there is such a thing as state rights. And these people...
I'm ordered there, and I winter in Salt Lake Valley all with the devil in Hades.
You'll be sure the other alternative. And you'll winter in Fort Leavenworth, General Hannah. You're the order.
Hey, where in the Hades did you come from, Colonel Johnson?
Brigadier General now. I've just arrived from Fort Leavenworth to replace you, General Hannah. You're not advancing in the morning. You're to build camps and remain through the winter, and it's likely to be known as Camp Scott. In the meantime, General Thomas L. Steen, who's been very friendly with the morning, is going to Salt Lake City to set up a peace commission to deal with Brigham Young. Ex-Governor Powell of Kentucky and Major Ben McCullough will form our delegation.
Very well, General Johnson. I'll relinquish my command gladly in return. I don't mind telling you I'm glad to be relieved of the prospect of spending a winter in these mountains.
General Harney had reason to be glad, for George Washington's army at Valley Forge didn't suffer any more than General Johnson's men did at Camp Scott. In tents and crude shelters, they lived through blizzards and temperatures that often reached 44 degrees below zero. Only the tough fiber of the men enabled them to get through the winter with the loss of comparatively few lives. Early the following spring, the Peace Commission began its dramatic session. Ex-Governor Powell of Kentucky stated the government's position and read a personal message from President Buchanan pardoning the Mormons for some 50 alleged crimes that had been charged against them, provided they allow the troops to enter Utah. Brigham Young listened attentively. Then came his turn to speak.
I thank President Buchanan for forgiving me, but I can't really tell what it is I have done. It is true that Smith and his men burned some wagons during the winter. If it is for this we are pardoned, I accept the pardon. But what has the government permitted mobs to do to us in the past? We have been plundered, whipped, our houses burned, our families murdered. But have troops ever been sent to stay or punish those mobs for their crimes? No. We have always been loyal and expect to continue so. But leave us alone. Do not send armed mobs into our midst. If you do, we will fight. We are willing that troops should come into our territory, but not to stay in our city. They may pass through the city if need be, but you must not quarter them nearer than 40 miles to any city. They must not use force against us or allow outsiders to come in under their protection and cross violence. If these terms are not kept, this city will be in ashes before your troops reach here. Everything that will burn shall be burned. Our wives and children will take refuge in the mountains while their husbands and sons fight to the last breath. That is our program, whether you like it or not. If you want war, you can have it. If you wish peace, peace it is. And we should be glad of it. But, what Russell brings you here? Let me bid you welcome, faithful friend.
Well, you won't be so glad to see me when you hear the news, boss.
Good news or bad, I bid you speak, Port Russell.
We've been betrayed, Prophet Young. We weren't sure the United States Army would remain immobile during the life of this conference. He's lied to us again. Broken your promises. The Army's on the move now, marching under this city.
Governor Powell, are you aware of it? It cannot be. General Johnson promised they should not move until after the conclusion of this meeting. My messenger would not receive me, Governor Powell. This action means war.
Governor Powell and Cummings remained calm, and again a compromise agreement was reached. The Army would be permitted to march through Salt Lake City, but would camp well beyond its borders. On the morning of June 26, 1858, General Johnson's army marched into the city, found it deserted. Brigham Young and 30,000 of his followers had fled south, ready to take up their abode in the mountains if the terms of the compromise were broken. From dawn until dusk, the soldiers marched through the abandoned city. In the windows of each house, they saw furnishings stacked upon a bed of straw. Shavings and kindling were piled against the outside walls. Everything was in readiness for the torch. Silently and orderly, the soldiers kept their pledge. No untoward incident occurred. A great holocaust was averted. 40 miles beyond the city, General Johnson's army halted. There they set up camp. The crisis passed. Brigham Young announced to his people that he was returning to his home, and they followed him back to their deserted city and took up normal life again. You have just heard the front page drama, War in Zion, dramatized from Chapter 10 of The Road to Zion, the epic story of the Mormon settlement of their promised land in Utah. This great narrative is now appearing serially in the American Weekly, a magazine with the greatest circulation in the world that comes to you each week with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. Thank you.